From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Hey, what is going on, beautiful people? Hope you all are staying dry on this rainy and wet hump day. Yes, it is getting bad out there, folks. Hopefully there's not too much flooding today, but it doesn't look good right now. Stay safe, drive safe, and be safe, folks. But we have a great show in store for you. So glad you've allowed Current Sports to be a part of your Wednesday afternoon. Of course, I am your host, Al Martin. Well, today's show, we dive into the Detroit Tigers as they tie the AL Central with a big win over Kansas City last night. To tie things up, we also talk about some key injuries for the Detroit Lions, the retiring of Chauncey Billups, the touchy comments that Floyd Mayweather Jr. had about Ray Rice, and today's Barbershop Wednesday focuses on Penn State University, restoring hope, penalties lifted for PSU. All of that and so much more, folks, but as custom here on Current Sports, here are your Current Sports quick hit headliners brought to you by the one, the only, Alex Char.
Good afternoon and happy hump day. I'm Alex Sharg, and these are your Current Sports quick hit headliners for Wednesday, September 10th. Rachel Shulis of the Michigan State women's cross country team has been named the women's NCAA Division I National Athlete of the Week. She also claimed the Big Ten Women's Cross Country Athlete of the Week honors. She's the first member of the Spartans to win the national honor this season and the second to earn the Big Ten award, joining men's teammate Nick Moon, who won on September 2nd. Shulis was recognized for her performance in Friday's Bill Dellinger Invitational, in which she led the number 6-ranked MSU women's squad to a first-place team finish over Portland, number 2 Oregon, Oregon State, and Portland State. The Spartans had the top three individual finishers in the women's 6K race, led by Shulis with a time of 19:38. The Detroit Tigers beat Kansas City 4-2 last night to pull within percentage points of the Royals atop the AL Central. Rajay Davis and J.D. Martinez homered for the Tigers, who can now sweep the three-game series with a win tonight. The normally sure-handed Royals made two errors Tuesday after making two in the series opener. Max Scherzer allowed a run on 7 hits in 6 2/3 innings. Kansas City's James Shields faces Detroit's Rick Porcello tonight, although the possibility of rain puts the game in doubt. Yahoo Sports writer Mark J. Spears reports that Chauncey Billups, the former Detroit Pistons All-Star nicknamed Mr. Big Shot, has decided to retire after 17 seasons. Billups, who will be 38 later this month, returned to the Pistons last season on a 2-year deal with a club option for a second season. But much like the previous two seasons, injuries hampered the point guard, limiting him to just 19 games. Chauncey said, quote, "It's just time. I know when it's time. My mind and my desire are still strong. I just can't ignore the fact that I haven't been healthy. I can try again to get a point where I think I can go, but I just can't sustain. Me not being able to play the way that I can play, that's when you kind of know that it's time," end quote. In other Pistons news, Detroit Pistons forward Greg Monroe was suspended without pay by the NBA today for the first two games of the upcoming regular season. Monroe pleaded guilty to impaired driving April 23rd, stemming from a February incident in Huntington Woods, Michigan. He said, quote, "I take full responsibility for my actions and made a regrettable mistake." Monroe was cited February 13th by the Huntington Woods Public Safety Department after a traffic stop and charged with operating while intoxicated, court documents show. The citation noted that a headlight was out and the vehicle had expired plates and insurance. Detroit Lions linebacker DeAndre Levy was named NFC Defensive Player of the Week today after his 10-tackle, 1-interception performance and Monday night's 35-14 season-opening win. Levy's interception was one of the best plays of the game. He caught a pass that deflected off of Giants tight end Larry Donald's leg and Lions safety Glover Quinn, securing the ball as he fell to the ground. Last year, Levy had a career-high 6 interceptions, tied for second most in the league. This is Levy's first Defensive Play of the Week award, and he's the Lions' first linebacker to win the award since Stephen Boyd in 1997. Corey Hilliard, who played most of Monday night's season-opening win against the Giants in place of starter Adrian Waddle, suffered an injury and torn ligaments in his right foot that are expected to sideline him for the rest of the season. On Tuesday, the Lions placed nickel cornerback Bill Bentley on the season-ending injured reserve with a torn ACL. Offensive lineman Garrett Reynolds, who was one of the Lions' final cuts in training camp, re-signed with the team today. The Lions are still expected to make a move in their secondary before Sunday's game against the Carolina Panthers. Detroit Pistons center Andre Drummond scored 2 points and had no rebounds yesterday in Team USA's 119-76 rout of Slovenia in the 2014 FIBA World Cup quarterfinals in Barcelona, Spain. The Americans led by only 7 points at the half, but were on top by 33 when Drummond entered with 5:44 to play in the fourth quarter. Drummond and Team USA continue play in the World Cup semifinals on Thursday, where the Pistons center might be pressed for playing time or even a chance to see the floor. The Americans last faced Lithuania in the 2012 Olympics and won by only 5 points, 99-94. And lastly, welterweight boxing champion Floyd Mayweather Jr. said he thinks the NFL should have stuck with its original 2-game suspension of former Baltimore Ravens running back Ray Rice. Mayweather says the league was influenced after seeing a second video of Rice knocking out his then-fiancée Janae Palmer in an Atlantic City casino elevator in February. The Ravens terminated Rice's contract on Monday and the NFL suspended him indefinitely. Mayweather went on to say, quote, "Like I've said in the past, no bumps, no bruises, no nothing. With OJ and Nicole, you've seen pictures. With Chris Brown and Rihanna, you've seen pictures. With Chad Ochocinco and Evelyn, you've seen pictures. You guys have yet to see any pictures of a battered woman, a woman who says she was kicked and beaten by me. So I just live my life and try to stay positive and try to become a better person each and every day," end quote. And those are your current sports quick hit headliners for this Wednesday, September 10th. Time to send it back to Al to start the show with this hump day. Lines are now open.
All right. Thanks a lot, Alex Shark, for those current sports quick hit headliners. The number to call in if you want to weigh in on anything that we talk about on today's show is 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also tweet me at Al Martin WKR and even leave a comment on our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. So much to talk about, so little time. We are going to try and tackle it all on today's show. But before we do, I also have to send you another reminder that, hey, Current Sports TV tapes tonight. Yes, this evening at 6 p.m., I will be sitting down and chatting with Marcel Carruthers, who is the head football coach over at Lansing Everett High School. Marcel, I mean, he always has a great program each and every year. He's done a great job with the Everett Vikings. Can't believe the football season is now in week 3. We'll chat about his expectations for the team and also go beyond his team and talk about how he got involved with coaching, his playing days. Also, we even talk about what he thinks about this whole Ray Rice ordeal. Again, if you want to be a part of that live studio audience, you can do so by signing up online for free at WKAR.org. You also get to see some highlights from the MSU volleyball weekend as they had a tough weekend against Duke in North Carolina. You also get to see some post-game coverage from the MSU and Oregon game, football game, of course. And also, hey, I decided to go out to Spartan Performance and link up with Dr. Joey Eisenman, who is the director over at Spartan Performance, which is one of the, if you don't know what Spartan Performance is, it's one of the premier, if not the premier, training facility for high school athletes right here in mid-Michigan, folks. I mean, they have so many kids that come in and out of those doors each and every day trying to improve their speed, agility, even the mental aspect of the game and how to eat better. You know, it's just an overall training facility that does a great job in benefiting athletes, high school athletes right here in mid-Michigan. It's a really cool facility. They've really just updated everything. They've moved from the fourth floor to the first floor, had their grand opening a few weeks ago. So I thought it'd be kind of cool to do a feature story, go out there and let one of the outstanding trainers out there. His name is Drew Cocker, who works with Joey Eisenman. Drew put me through the training regimen, a 1-hour training regimen, folks, that you do not want to miss. So you'll get to see all of that and so much more. Again, be a part of tonight's TV studio audience by signing up online for free at WKAR.org. And for those who unfortunately can't make it out to the taping tonight, you can catch that episode each and every Thursday night. This Thursday night at 10 p.m. on WKAR TV. Well, let's dive right into it. For Alex Shark, how you doing, my man?
Pretty good, Al. And guess what? I can't wait to get to the end of the week because you and I always talk Floyd Mayweather boxing.
Yeah.
And he has quite the fight this weekend with a lot on his mind. I mean, he's got the Ray Rice comments. He's got his other personal troubles with his own girlfriend, fiance, whatever you call her. But
Right.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, and we'll definitely dive into his comments on Ray Rice, which, folks, if you did not hear in our quick hit headliners, he had a pretty interesting take on what the NFL should have done or should do in lieu of this whole situation. And, you know, I simply just thought they were idiotic. And you talk about watching that fight again. This is Marcos Maidana 2 versus, you know, this is Mayweather and Marcos Maidana 2, the rematch of this fight that took place in May. Really a fight in which we really saw for the first time Mayweather put to the test like that. I mean, he hadn't been cut throughout his entire career. Maidana was able to cut him. It was an unbelievable fight. But with these comments, I can pretty much guarantee, Alex, that there are many that planned on watching the fight that may be reneging on that now, because his comments were just in your face. And even, to be honest, from my perspective, from a personal perspective here, looking at what he said, those comments may have just turned me off, man. I don't know. I don't even know if I want to watch this fight Saturday, just because I don't know if I want to support Floyd Mayweather and put money in his pocket just because of what he said. I mean, it really touchy stuff there, man. It really rubbed me the wrong way, and I'm sure it rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. So we'll get to that. We'll definitely get to that. But we have to first start off our discussion today by talking a little Tigers. How about those Tigers, folks? They are certainly coming up in the clutch, showing up when they need to, going against the team that they are battling in that AL Central for that top spot in Kansas City, and proving that, hey, you know, we're still the Tigers here. I thought it was very impressive, folks. If you didn't catch last night's game, the Detroit Tigers beat Kansas City 4-2 last night to pull within percentage points of the Royals atop the AL Central. So, yeah, things are pretty much tied up, folks, now. Rajay Davis and JD Martinez, they both homer for the Tigers, who can now sweep the three-game series with a win tonight. So let's dive right into it, Alex. I thought that Max Scherzer was very, very, very solid last night. I thought he pitched a pretty solid game. He allowed only one run in 6 2/3 innings. And, you know, what really stood out to me was exactly how Brad Ausmus, the Tigers manager, has been using Scherzer in his past few outings. Right now, you know, looking at how Brad has sort of divvied up the amount of pitches that Max Scherzer has produced out in the mound, Brad Ausmus is kind of sending a message that he's doing whatever it takes right now in order for this team to win, or to put this team in a position to win and make the playoffs. If you look at his past two outings, if just specifically last night, though, Scherzer, he had a pitch count of 117. His previous outing to that was 124. This is the first time that we've seen Max in quite a long time.
And his career is 127. Yeah. That's his high.
Exactly. That's his high. I mean, this is the first time we've seen in quite some time where Max has pitched back-to-back times with pitch counts that are very, very high. Brad Ausmus is showing that, hey, he knows the desperation of this situation right now. He knows the Tigers have to win games right now in order to make a case and to battle off all the other teams that are trying to make a wild card spot, or to trying to, you know, and even trying to compete for that top spot in the AL Central. He knows the sense of desperation right now, and he's willing to do whatever it takes, even if that means, you know, pitching one of his, you know, putting one of his best pitchers on the mound, and arguably the best pitcher on the team, and Max Scherzer on the mound, and you know, putting that arm to work at 117, 120 pitches. I think it's very, you know, it kind of puts in perspective just where Brad's mindset is in this whole scheme of things as well.
And aside from just Brad's perspective and how long Scherzer is going, I do still think at the same time, that's what the Tigers need, Al. They need their starting pitchers to go 8, 9 innings even. It's maybe a late 7. And as much as the pitch count is high, yeah, sure, it screws up their arm. Years down the road, yeah, they're not going to be able to throw nearly 127. But if you're the Tigers, Scherzer's probably gone next year. You're not really worried about his long-term deal with the Tigers.
It's a win now. It's a win now mentality. It's a win now season.
I mean, is it detrimental? Of course it is. But I'm not at all any upset about, you know, how long they can. I'd rather have them than the bullpen, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, right now you got to win games. It doesn't matter if, you know, about pitch counts here. It doesn't matter about the wear and tear on guys right now. You have to win to stave off these other teams who are on your heels of putting you out the playoffs. So Brad understands that, and it just, you know, looking at that again, 117 pitches last night for Max, it kind of just puts that in perspective. Also, hey, I got to shout out JD Martinez. How about him? So consistent. His consistency at bat has certainly been remarkable. He had a homer last night, folks. He has 20 homers now for the Tigers. He had 10 homers in AAA Toledo before the Tigers brought him up, putting him at 30 homers in pro ball for him this season. I mean, I thought it was remarkable, just, and it is remarkable just how consistent JD Martinez is and has been for the Tigers. Miggy, I thought he was big last night, sort of setting the tone, setting the table for the Tigers in that first inning, getting getting that double. I mean, I thought it was very huge for him. And how about Miggy? I mean, a guy who obviously is not healthy, isn't healthy at all. He's still battling. You know, we've seen him run with the limp countless times. But he comes in there, and I'll tell you what, his arms and his swing is certainly not affected. He is coming in there, you know, doing what he needs to do, getting those hits, getting those singles and doubles to put his team in position to do so, showing, you know, that, hey, this is what the greats of the game do. You know, no matter what adversity they may be feeling or going through at the time, no matter what injury may be hampering them or seem to be hampering them, they have to still produce, and they are going to produce. They sort of turn it up to another level, and Miguel Cabrera is certainly in that regard. I'm watching that game in the first saying, okay, all right, and I talked about consistency yesterday. Can the Tigers duplicate that type of success they had in game one against Kansas City? And then you have your best player send a message like that early on. It set the table and it kind of put Kansas City in a deficit to start.
Absolutely. Now, I want to get your thoughts, Al, switching tides here, to the chances that Kansas City had. I mean, if you remember, they almost had Moustakas come up, and he probably would have done some damage. They had two foul balls that were inches away from being fair and honestly costing Max Scherzer the game. And if you remember, I think it was Alex, someone in the eighth or ninth almost had a 3-run homer to take the lead 5-4.
Right.
I mean, is your panic meter still as high for the bullpen as it was earlier on? I mean, they've been better lately, but are you at all worried now after last night's game?
I'm always worried about the Tigers bullpen. Let's just put that out there. I mean, I don't care if they came out and pitched, you know, five straight saves to close
the
season.
Well, for the last
you know
two,
I mean?
3 weeks, they were consistent.
Yeah, they've been great, but I will say I can put it down a little bit, but I'm still wary of that Tigers bullpen. I'm not completely sold, even though we're talking about a small stretch here. This is a small sample size of the bigger picture of what we've seen this Tigers bullpen do over the course of now two or three years. So I won't say one small stretch is going to totally convince me that the Tigers bullpen is 100% clear and ready to go right now. But I will say, I mean, last night you brought up a good point there that I wanted to get to was Kansas City. I mean, if you look at here, this is really remarkable for the Tigers. It seems as though when the pressure is on, the Tigers normally are going to show up. You know what I mean? And, you know, right now with this whole thing, with this whole battle between them and Kansas City and the AL Central, if you look at last year, you know, Kansas City was Cleveland last year, and Detroit was trying to stave off them to come through with the AL Central victory. And if you look at it, the Tigers last season went 15-4 against the Indians. This year, they've gone 11-4 against Kansas City. Now, last year, they ended up winning the AL Central by a mere one game, folks. This year, and kind of in that same position, that same desperation mode mentality, they have got the wins they needed to get against that one-on-one matchup, against that team that they're competing against this year, being the Kansas City Royals. Last year, 15-4. This year, 11-4, with a chance to improve on that again tonight. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, folks, I'm sorry, I had something in my ear here. Again, folks, you can call in on this, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. And, again, consistency is now the key here for the Tigers, folks. And how about, hey, Ian Kinsler, you know, we haven't talked about the Tigers defense a lot here, but Ian Kinsler making a crucial diving stop. Unbelievable if you saw that last night, folks. Diving stop to his left on Josh Willingham's grounder in the eighth inning to sort of, I mean, that could have got, that's an inning that really could have got out of the hand for the Tigers, Alex. One run in that inning for Kansas City that really could have escalated out of control if Kinsler does not make that play.
And look at all the errors from Suarez during the year. Castellanos had some errors. It's good to see the veteran on that infield making that play.
But you talk about errors. I mean, for Kansas City, though, I mean, it seems as though Kansas City just, they have not been able to just find the number against the Tigers. You know what I mean? I mean, two errors for the Royals last night. Two errors, not one, but two. I mean, and this is a normally sure-handled Royals team, especially as we've been seeing these past few weeks. And, you know, to make two in one game, I mean, that is unlike this team. And then of course, Gerard Dyson's, he shouldn't have went for the steal. You know, and that really closed out things for the Tigers to end that game. But, you know, it was a mistake in the night for him, which you really do not see. You don't see mistakes in the base running area for the Royals. they are just making mistakes here that the Tigers are taking advantage of and salvaging throughout this series. And the Tigers are, you know, and it just so happens that they're playing the Kansas City Royals. The Tigers are showing that there is a clear separation between them and the Royals right now, especially when they match head to head. And it's good to see this because I was always wondering, you know, how, especially, you know, with this whole AL Central race going on between the Royals and Tigers, you know, with the Royals getting the wins they've gotten these past few weeks to make this a competition and to really salvage the lead, you know, for these past few weeks, I always wonder, you know, okay, one-on-one, let's see if they can do that against the Tigers. And throughout the season, it's just the proof is in the pudding here. The Kansas City Royals just cannot beat the Detroit Tigers, Alex.
Yeah, and what was most shocking to me, Al, about the errors is it's September. You don't make two errors in September right before you go to the playoffs. I mean, that's for May and June. Two errors in a crucial game. This was basically a playoff game. You don't make two errors when you're at the top of the AL Central fighting for a playoff spot with 19 games left. So that's what's most shocking me. It's not like this team's still learning and they're not having any replacements. They don't have that many injuries. They have a consistent infield. Former Tiger Infante also in that infield. There are plenty of guys that have experience. That's inexcusable for the Royals right now.
Yeah, so the Tigers are with an opportunity now to sweep this series, folks. Again, what are your thoughts on the Tigers' push now? 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We'll take your calls here on the air up until 2 o'clock. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports, and we do have a comment here. Mark McElwee says, the Tigers can win the division. They need to take three or four more from Kansas City and play better against the lesser AL Central teams. Again, thanks a lot, Mark McElwee. He just commented on our Facebook page. Again, at facebook.com/currentsports. And I totally agree with Mark. I mean, yeah. I mean, if you look at it, the Tigers, I mean, they show up against the teams that they are supposed to show up against in that division, at least. I will say that. Now, they've had some mental lapses against other teams outside of this division where they should have beaten the certain teams. But if you talk about, you know, the Tigers' success in this division, though, I agree, Mark. They have to show that, okay, it's fine and dandy. They're beating the Royals who are there. They're trying to stave off the Hills from. But they have to get those wins and get those division wins or series wins, I should say, against the teams that are lesser in the division. So, hey, I agree. I think the Tigers are sitting in a good position right now where they can sort of send a message to the rest of the league that they are ready for this moment and possibly sweeping the Kansas City Royals. And I'm still sticking to my guns here. I still think the Tigers now, especially with things now tied in that division, I still believe that the Tigers will win the AL Central, Alex.
Yeah, and especially even with Miguel Cabrera limping and bombing home runs, that's a good sign. I mean, you don't see many players come back from that. I mean, we talked more about that yesterday, but I'm not so sold on the AL Central, Al. But what I am sold is they'll probably edge into the playoffs somehow.
Yeah,
somehow,
some way. Now, when they make the playoffs, that's going to be a whole nother discussion and rant that I have for that. So, all right, folks, before we hit the break, I also want to bring up the Detroit Lions. If you haven't heard, folks, some pretty alarming injuries for the Detroit Lions that really kind of caught me off guard. Corey Hilliard, who played most of Monday night's season opening win against the New York Giants at right tackle in place of starter Adrian Waddle, he suffered a Lisfranc surgery. I think. Am I saying that right, Alex?
Lisfranc.
I am so bad at medical terminology.
I think it's Lisfranc.
Thank goodness I did not, you know, try to become a doctor because I would have probably been mispronouncing everything. But anyway, he is expected to be sidelined for the rest of the season. So no Corey Hilliard on that offensive line. And also on Tuesday, the Lions placed nickel cornerback Bill Bentley on season-ending injured reserve with a torn ACL. So some alarming areas here. First, from, you know, talking about Bill Bentley here, Alex. I mean, he tears his ACL. He's a corner. This is the area that I have been harping on for the Detroit Lions, and many Lions fans have been harping on to improve this past season, and they certainly didn't. Looking at last year, again, how many times this team was beaten down the field? I mean, it was a glaring need. It was the Achilles heel, one of the Achilles heels for the Detroit Lions in getting over that hump and making some postseason noise. That secondary was awful last season, and I thought that they were going to address it in the NFL draft, but they waited till round four of the NFL draft to address the need of adding a corner, and of course, Nevin Lawson. Now, right now, with Bill Bentley now being one of your corners, he tears his ACL. This is not just a normal cornerback position here. This is that nickel cornerback position, Alex, where you are not just sitting in that secondary stopping guys from making plays downfield. But there are also, it's a dynamic position because you're dealing with blitz packages in this position as well, where you may come out and, you know, surprise a team and come off that edge and try to go after the quarterback. So you're not just lallygagging and trying to make stops in the secondary. This could be a huge blow for that Lions. And I think it is a huge blow for that Lions secondary, and they're going to need guys to step up. Now, what move is going to be made? The Tigers, I think, have to make a move to go after another corner, I think. Whether or not they sign Champ Bailey, hey, we'll see. I think that'll be a good move that could maybe prove out to be positive for the Lions. And Nevin Lawson, I don't know, maybe they put him in that position now to replace Bentley. But the thing about Nevin, even though I thought Nevin Lawson overall played very, very well in that Monday night game, he was able to stick with Victor Cruz, who was also on my fantasy team. Thank you, Nevin. But, you know, he did a great job of sticking with Victor Cruz and not making, you know, not allowing him to make big plays down the field, if any down the field. Maybe they'll stick Nevin Lawson there. Maybe they'll sign Champ Bailey. All we know right now is the Lions have to make a move to address that need now.
Yeah, and you could argue that Eli Manning couldn't even get it down the field to Victor Cruz because of all that pressure
right from
the Lions front. But yeah, definitely a move is needed. And these injuries, I think, are the worst you can have. And although they're not impact players, these two injuries were at the two positions that the Lions needed the most help with. I mean, you look at the Lions offense, quarterbacks, receivers, running backs, tight ends, line. Between those five, the line obviously needs the most help. Looking at the defense, the secondary, corners, safeties, linebackers, up front four or five, the defensive line, you definitely need most help with the corners. So they were the two biggest positions where you needed the most help with, and it's not like these were the number ones on those positions. You could argue maybe Adrian Waddle, but these certainly were guys that they needed to be healthy. Now, what the Lions will do corner-wise, what you mentioned Champ Bailey is one. I mean, there must be a reason why he was released at the age of 38 he is right now. At the age of 38, there must have been a significant reason why he was released. And you could argue with the same thing with Michael Sam when he was released. Well, they didn't have any. They had too many guys at his position.
Or, well, I tell you what, just the fact that Champ Bailey was even brought in for a workout shows that they are kind of in desperation mode right now to find somebody to fill that void.
Yeah, it could be a little bit desperation. But even if they trade someone, I mean, you look at their cap right now. I mean, their wiggle room there isn't necessarily ideal in any way. I'm even puzzled what kind of trade they'll be able to make and who they'll be able to give up, Al.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, Alex, I always say, you know, I definitely voiced my displease of how the Lions did not do anything really to address that secondary once they drafted Eric Ebron in that first round. And I'm sitting there like, okay, you got Brandon Pettigrew. I mean, I didn't even see Eric. Did he even make a catch?
He made one catch, but that's the thing. What has Ebron done?
Exactly. You know, it's like you got Brandon Pettigrew, you got Joseph Fourier. I mean, why did you need to draft Eric Ebron? And I think now not drafting a corner in that draft is really coming back to haunt the Lions now. I truly believe that, Alex. I truly believe. I mean, you had, you know, possibly Darquez Denard. Hey, we could be talking about Denard playing on this Lions team. But
who Marvin Lewis said is the best corner he's ever seen in Cincinnati.
Exactly. High praise. High praise, right? So, hey, that could have been the Lions right there. We couldn't even be – this wouldn't be a discussion right now. But, hey, you never know. So it's going to be interesting now. And also you talked about Corey Hilliard, who now, you know, he's out for the year. He played pretty decent at that offensive line. And now, you know, this could be an opportunity for Garrett Reynolds, who, is slated to now replace Hilliard and to replace that right tackle position. This is an opportunity for him to sort of step up because, Reynolds is a guy who got cut from the team, and they decided to re-sign him now because they need him to come in. They need somebody to come in and fill that void of need in that area. And, you know, this is an opportunity for Garrett to prove that he belongs to be in the NFL, in this team. So sometimes you like those chip-on-the-shoulder guys. Yeah. Those guys who were cut had some time to reflect and say, okay, what did I do wrong? Maybe I need to work my butt off some more here. This could be an opportunity sent from heaven for him, and, you know, he has to salvage it.
Yeah, and hey, guess what? Mekaji Reynolds is looking for something at that offensive tackle position. Call Kaj. He's waiting for a call.
I know, right? Exactly.
But you know what, Al? the injury is so big for this weekend because look at Carolina's defense. I mean, they have one of the better defenses, especially on the ends with Evans. They have one of the better defenses in the league.
Right.
And especially probably top-tier defensive ends in the league.
Right, right.
So that's a huge loss for the Lions this weekend. And Stafford was so successful because they had so much time in the pocket. The offensive line, we talked about how great of a job they did. That's got to hold very true this weekend.
Yeah, certainly, without a doubt. Folks, if you want to weigh in on anything we talk about here on today's show, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we'll talk about Floyd Mayweather's alarming comments concerning the Ray Rice suspension and assault on his then-fiancée, Janae Palmer. We'll also talk about the legacy of Chauncey Billups as he decides to retire. And yes, Barbershop Wednesday will be coming right at you. Don't go anywhere. Current Sports returns in the blink of an eye.
Dolorido corazón, hoy vives desconsolado por perder esa pasión que se te fue de la mano. Los culpables son tus ojos para que me abras mirado.
Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, joined by Alex Sharg. I have to quickly remind you all again that Current Sports TV tapes this evening at 6 p.m. I will be sitting down with head coach of the Lansing Everett Vikings football team, Marcel Carruthers. Again, if you want to be a part of that live studio audience, you can do so by signing up online for free at WKAR.org. And Alex, you wanted to, before we hit the break, we were talking about the Lions. Of course, Bill Bentley, Lions corner. He tears his ACL. He's out for the year. Corey Hilliard, the offensive tackle for the Detroit Lions, he is also out for the season as well. And you want to briefly talk about Bill Bentley's history, I guess,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, if you Lion fans are listening, if you remember his rookie season, he was out basically the entire year because of some shoulder injuries. And then last year, he missed the last game. I think he missed a few games. He had some other injury. But for a third-round draft pick, I mean, third round, that's for the NFL, that's pretty high. For a guy like Bill Bentley, who still, he's probably what? He was probably a second or third guy on those list of corners. I would say that he might be a little bit of a bust at this point. I mean, he was from a smaller program. There was a lot of hype behind him because he wasn't out of a big-name school. I honestly expect a little bit more out of Bill Bentley at this point, especially considering that that was the only corner they went with in that draft.
Yeah, so you definitely think they'll probably let him go after this? You think so?
It's going to be tough.
I have to see what his contract stipulations are now.
Now that it's season ending, it's going to be tough to keep him back.
Yeah, I wonder what his contract stipulations are right now, if they signed him for a long-term deal or not. I'm not too familiar with it. But again, folks, 517-355-9527. Let's shift gears now and definitely talk about this story, a story that really just rubbed me the wrong way. Floyd Money Mayweather, Alex, of course, the most popular man in the boxing world, most popular man in Las Vegas, one of the most richest, one of the richest athletes in the game today. You know, Floyd, who has had his, of course, past grievances and battles and situations with domestic abuse and assault, certainly. Floyd decided to open his mouth and make some comments that has many people talking, without a doubt. First of all, to break it down, folks, he said that he thinks the NFL should have stuck with its original two-game suspension for former Baltimore Ravens running back Ray Rice. Of course, Rice, the Ravens terminated his contract on Monday, and the NFL suspended him indefinitely after video was released by TMZ Sports showing him delivering a left hook to his now wife's face in an elevator. Now, Mayweather says the league was influenced after seeing that video of him and his then-fiancée, Janae Palmer, in that Atlantic City Casino elevator in February. And he went on to say this, folks, quote, "Like I've said in the past, no bumps, no bruises, no nothing. With OJ and Nicole, you seen pictures. With Chris Brown and Rihanna, you seen pictures. With Chad Ochocinco and Evelyn, you seen pictures. You guys have yet to see any pictures of a battered woman, a woman who says she was kicked and beaten by Mayweather, that is. So I just live my life and try to stay positive and try to become a better person each and every day." Now, that was Mayweather addressing his situation in which his former girlfriend or fiance at the time accused Mayweather of assaulting her in front of their children. And again, you know, he went on to sort of defend Ray Rice, saying that, you know, hey, you know, this situation with Ray Rice, the NFL is overreacting and they should have stuck to their guns here. Boy, I tell you, Floyd Mayweather, you know, a man, first off, Alex, who I think, you know, is a master in the ring. He's one of the most coveted boxers in all of the game. Probably, in my opinion, the best defensive boxer in the history of the game. He's a talent. He's something to watch. You know, and you can't argue with an undefeated record, you know. And looking at this weekend, you brought it up at the beginning of the show, Mayweather has a big bout against Marcus Maidana. This is the rematch of the fight that took place in May, in which Floyd Money Mayweather won in 12 rounds due to a decision. First off, these comments coming from Floyd Mayweather, in my opinion, if you really dive into them and sort of pick apart the layers, it sounds like these comments come from an abuser himself. You know, this is something that these comments that Mayweather decided to make sound like somebody who has been found guilty or been found red-handed, I should say, in a domestic violence abuse situation. Because if you look at it, how can you argue? First of all, how can you argue with video, plain black and white video, in-your-face video of an athlete like Ray Rice straight soccer punching a woman in the elevator? You can't argue with it. The proof is in the pudding. I always say that. And that the mere fact that there is video of the situation shows that Ray Rice was clearly in the wrong. No man should ever put his hands on a woman, let alone soccer puncher. So the fact that Ray Mayweather makes these comments and says that, you know, and just kind of lays everything out, there were no pictures, blah, 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 you know, equating to his situation, and basically defending Ray Rice. The fact that he defended Ray Rice in this whole thing, is defending Ray Rice in this whole situation, his comments come off like, you know, he's guilty. You know, he's guilty for his situation in the past. And I just think they are totally idiotic. They are totally just mind-blowing. I knew Floyd Mayweather is controversial, but right now he's speaking on something that he just seems to have a huge ignorance to, period.
And if that's the case, if he's really this alleged abuser, he is begging TMZ to come over to his house, to dig into his tapes, and find something on him. He's begging TMZ to look into his own personal situation here. It's not the first time that Mayweather's been looked into by anyone. TMZ, did you see that video with him in the bathtub with, like, the girls? And that came out, like, 2 weeks ago from TMZ.
Mm-hmm.
So, first off, how dumb to literally ask the public to distract from Ray Rice and focus everything on your own domestic abuse that you probably committed, first of all. Second of all, Al, the other thing I have to mention is that with this whole comment right here, it kind of reminds me of the movie Blue Chips. Have you seen Blue Chips, Al?
I have. Is that the one with Shaq?
Right. And Nick Nolte?
Yeah.
If you remember that movie, there's an instance before Nick Nolte gets caught with bribing recruits and giving them cars and all kinds of money to come play there. There was a moment where he was asked by many of the media members, well, what are your comments on the fact that there's a car registered to the name of this person and Shaq is basically driving a car in college? And Nick Nolte goes, what proof have you have? Do you have a paper in front of me? Do you have any proof? It's kind of like what Floyd's saying here is, there's no video of me. You know, I have nothing to prove. He's attacking the media and he's attacking anybody that's asking him about it.
Mm-hmm.
And
he's very defensive. That's
right,
something somebody.
Defensive.
If you're defensive like that, you come off as guilty. You know what I mean? You come off as straight up guilty. You know, it's like when mom walks in the room, and you know looks in the cookie jar and sees that you know the cookies that you weren't supposed to eat for lunchtime are gone, and she questions you about it, and you say, I wasn't even in the room. I mean, it wasn't even me. You know, you come off. You know, even commenting on this makes Floyd Mayweather come off as guilty, period. And he went on to say, you know, he had an interesting comment here. He said, that, you know, talking about Ray Rice, quote, "I think there's a lot worse things that go on in other people's households also. It's just not caught on video, if that's safe to say," end quote. Floyd. That's a line that you don't cross. You know what I mean? Saying that there are a lot worse things that go on. You're sort of kind of diminishing the whole situation that, okay, yeah, okay, that the punch wasn't anything. You know what I mean? And Floyd just should have just shut up about it. You know, why even make a comment on it? You know, why not? If a reporter asks you about it, say no comment. I maintain my innocence, and with my whole spiel that went on between, you know, his girlfriend or fiance at the time, Chantel Jackson, and move on from it. You know, making these comments couldn't come at the worst time for Floyd Mayweather Jr., seeing as though he has a big fight, a big pay-per-view fight happening this Saturday. I'm sure that there are many, many people out there who have read these comments, who have heard these comments from Floyd Mayweather Jr. that are reevaluating their whole fandom of him. You know, those that, I'm pretty sure there are many people out there that have read these comments and said, okay, I was going to watch the Floyd Mayweather fight this weekend, but hey, now that you decide to make these comments, I'm not going to. Floyd, I'm sure, lost some fans, some you know, especially women fans, female fans out there with these comments. And it just idiot. He just stuck his foot in his mouth here. And, you know, Floyd has made some controversial comments in the past. But, man, for me, this one takes the cake, Alex.
Yeah, I don't know how much worse it can be. And, Al, do you still think Floyd will come out this weekend strong with all the distractions going on?
The reason why I think so is because Floyd, I mean, he dealt with, if you remember, McDonough won,
right,
you know, in May, you know, right on the brink of that fight. He had to deal with the whole situation with him and Chantel Jackson. That's when it really came out about this whole domestic abuse thing. You know what I mean? With Floyd. And he dealt with it. You know, he went in a ring and sort of made the ring his safe haven. You know, his getaway, if you will. So I do think this will be a good fight this weekend. This is an opportunity. If Floyd is going to lose, hey, it's got to come against this man, because I've never seen throughout Floyd's entire fighting career someone push him to the brink the way that Marcos Maidana did. Now, will I watch it, though? That's the thing now, man, because this is the thing. If I do watch it, I'm not paying for it. You know what I mean? I will not be paying for this fight. If I'm watching this fight, I will be over, you know, maybe my cousins or, you know, a friend of mine who has it going and is, you know, is just hosting it for free. I will not be paying for this fight now. Something that I definitely contemplated early on in this week. Yeah.
And let's face it, you're not paying for a knockout. You're paying for at least a 10 to 14 round fight. There's not going to be a third round knockout by any means.
No, I don't. Hey, you never know in boxing.
It's a typical Floyd fight.
Yeah, it's a typical Floyd fight, but you never know in boxing. No, even though I, you know, Floyd Mayweather's fights historically don't go, you know, anywhere. You know, knockouts don't happen with Floyd Mayweather. So, but yeah, I mean, touchy comments though. I definitely think he just stuck his foot in his mouth. All right, again, folks, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can call in and give your thoughts on anything we talk about on today's show. Before we hit the second break, Alex, I think I got to bring up this, man. One of my favorite Pistons of all time. One of my favorite basketball players personally for me of all time, because, you know, as a kid, that was my very first sports autograph from this guy. You know, I remember I was at the Pistons game. And, you know, my very first Piston game, I'm about, like, you know, 12 or 13 years old. I'm there with my dad. And I remember they were playing the Milwaukee Bucks. Ray Allen was still with the team at the time. This is back in the day, folks. And, you know, I'm sitting there behind the home team basket before the game. And, you know, Chauncey Billups is signing autographs to a lot of the fans there. And at first I was a little nervous. You know, I'm like, you know, should I go over there? I had a Pistons cap. And my dad's like, go over there and get Chauncey's autograph. So I go over there. I run over there. And, you know, Chauncey's, you know, signing autographs, and he says hi to me. He's like, yeah, how you doing, man? Enjoy the game. And sends me back, you know, his autograph with his initial CB. And, man, you know, that's a memory that will never, ever, ever leave me, man. And Chauncey, he was my favorite Pistons player, you know, when I was growing up. Looking at the 2004 Pistons who went on to win the NBA championship, I remember going crazy. I still have my Chauncey Billups jersey to this day. But again, folks, he decided to leave the game and retire. He will certainly be beloved and just known for a complete class. When you talk about Chauncey Billups, one of the very first words to come out many people's mouths is that he was just a classy, classy, classy individual. And, you know, even Colin Cowherd, who's, you know, I was listening to him earlier, actually like a few weeks ago, and he was talking about the NBA and how class is sort of, you know, lacking in today's sports, whatever, and it's very few to find, you know, athletes who just exude classiness. And he talked about how Chauncey Billups is the epitome of class. He said Chauncey Billups is the classiest athlete he has ever covered. And Colin Cowherd has been in the game.
That's a big statement.
Oh, it's a huge statement. He's been in the game for 25 years. 25 years covering sports. So that certainly says a lot. But
even over a guy like Chris Paul, the head of the Players Association, who has a lot of class.
Yeah, Cowherd said in all his 25 years of sports, not even just in basketball, but in sports, Chauncey Billups is the classiest athlete he's ever covered. Says a lot. He will be missed, Alex.
That's awesome. And Chauncey made, I think Chauncey had an effect in many different ways. He may have been the guy you cringed over after he hit a game-winning shot at the buzzer.
Mr. Big Shot, baby.
He might have been the guy that you just loved because of the way he conducted his interviews, how nice he was with fans, lots of different charity work. They had Chauncey Billups basketball camp in the area. If any of you listeners attended that camp, we'd love to hear from you. And he may have been the player that you also cringed over once Joe Dumars traded him away. I mean, that was an icon that was traded away for the quote-unquote long-term success of the Pistons. So, you know, definitely a lot of different moods and emotions with Chauncey over the years. And one aspect that I think is ignored with him that is key is he really shaped others. I mean, he, you can argue, definitely shaped George Blaha's career on the microphone as a broadcaster.
You think so? I don't know.
I mean,
I wouldn't go that far.
If you look at George Blaha's best calls, people remember the Mr. Big Shot again.
But hold on, Alex. Going back to the Bad Boys era with Isaiah Thomas, Joe Dumars, and that team, I think they were a little more popular than this 2004 Pistons, Bad Boys number two, if you will. I don't even think you should dub them Bad Boys number two, but some people do. But I think that era defined George Blaha. Well, but proceed. I know Mr. Big Shot, that was a big call, but I don't think it defined Blaha's career. But I see what you're saying.
I mean, it was one of the many calls of his career.
Yeah, yeah, memorable calls. Yeah. I think, if anything, Chauncey Billups sort of, that era of the Pistons sort of shaped Mason, definitely. I tell you that because Mason is now known across sports as, you know, this, you know, Detroit basketball, that kind of stuff. It shaped Mason's career, but not so much George's, though. But I see where you're going.
That. Well, regardless, he shaped a lot. He shaped others, and you definitely could argue when
players certainly.
Yeah, you can even argue when Flip Saunders came in, he was a big factor in letting Flip Saunders come to the Pistons as head coach. And if you remember that, I think they had some quarrels back in Minnesota initially, from what I recall. And eventually they made up, and I'm sure Chauncey spoke highly of Flip as an offensive-minded coach. And Larry Brown, I mean, Larry Brown even came out many times to say that Chauncey was, you know, He heavily enjoyed Chauncey, one of the better point guards he's coached.
One of his favorite players to cover. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, yeah, Chauncey Billups. I mean, I'm curious to know where you guys out there in listener world will rank Chauncey as far as point guards are concerned, because there are so many great point guards who have come through the Detroit Pistons organization. Well, of course, the cream of the crop is Isaiah Thomas. Yeah. You know, Isaiah is clear number one.
I mean, who's your closest?
Joe Dumars is number two for me, and I think Chauncey Billups may crop that that he may crack that top five.
It's funny because, you know, Joe and Chauncey both kind of rotated as point guards and shooting guards. They were kind of the tweeners. I mean, you saw at the end of Joe D's career, he was more of a two coming off the wing rather than a point guard.
But I just think, looking at how Chauncey rallied that team in 2004, he was the NBA Finals MVP for that year. That's when really Chauncey was, you know, that was kind of his coming out party, or his arrival, I guess you could say. He, even though he had a great stint with Minnesota with Kevin Garnett, but he wasn't the guy. He was really, in my eyes, the guy for that 2004 championship team, being the MVP, being the leader, one of the leaders on that team. Chauncey, he will be missed, man. And, sometimes, you know, it's just time to go. You know,
I'd love to talk to Joe Dumars about that, about his experience with Chauncey. Maybe he kind of saw himself in Chauncey a little bit, being a similar kind of height, statue of a player. So
yeah, definitely. All right, let's hit our second break, folks. When we come back, we'll wrap up the show with Barbershop Wednesday, folks. Penalties lifted for Penn State University. Don't want to miss that. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Current Sports. 10 minutes left in today's show, folks. If you want to call in and give your thoughts on anything, 517-355-9, 9527-517-355-9527. Remind you all, the current sports TV tapes tonight, 6 p.m. You can join us here at the WKAR-TV studios at the Communication Arts and Sciences Building as I sit down with Marcel Carruthers, who is the head football coach of the Lansing Everett Vikings. Be safe, though, for those coming out tonight. It is getting pretty bad out there. I'm on Twitter right now, and many people are just sort of tweeting. Don't tweet while you drive, though. I guess they are tweeting while they're driving because they're saying I'm driving right now, and it is downpouring very, very hard. Be safe. Be safe out there, folks. It is one heck of a storm taking place right now. All right. Well, let's wrap up our show by just sort of putting a bow, I guess, on this story, Alex. Barbershop Wednesday, sort of, you know, hitting on this whole Penn State situation that has really gotten a lot of airtime as well. It is time for Barbershop Wednesday.
Yeah, I mean, we can't talk straight in the barbershop. Then where can we talk straight? We can't talk straight nowhere else. You know, this ain't nothing but healthy conversation.
All right, that's right, Cedric. Healthy conversation. You know how you go into the barbershop and everybody thinks there's a sports expert. So today's Barbershop Wednesday debate topic focuses on restoring hope. Restoring hope. Penalties lifted for Penn State. If you haven't heard, folks, on Monday, as soon as, of course, it happened on the same day when that Ray Rice video was released by TMZ, that same day, about a few moments after we actually wrapped up our Monday show, Penn State, it was released by the NCAA that Penn State, all their, you know, they were basically kind of rekindled in a way because their bowl bans were lifted, so they are now eligible for a bowl this year, and their 85 scholarships were restored. Of course, that all took place because of that Jerry Sandusky scandal, in which put Jerry behind bars. Joe Paterno, his statue was removed because of it. Just the whole child molestation charges that took place, and the NCAA came down really, really hard on the football program. Alex, I definitely think this was the right move for the NCAA. It really surprised me, though, because the NCAA, I tell you what, when they hand down a punishment, when they decide to do something, I mean, it's pretty much set in stone. They don't renege on it. They don't go back and say, okay, we made a mistake here. We made a mistake. Let's evaluate the situation and think about it. That doesn't happen with the NCAA. I really have to commend them for this. You know, something that I haven't been able to say often, you know, when discussing the NCAA. Football players and students really had nothing at all to do with what a sick human being like Jerry Sandusky was able to do at Penn State. You know, they had nothing to do with it. Now, maybe the people around Jerry Sandusky, you know, like, you know, maybe Joe Paterno and some others of that coaching staff may have, you know, seen some things and definitely should have reported some different situations here and there to sort of alleviate this problem that eradicated out of control, where that, you know, happened to get out of control, I should say. But the football players and students had nothing to do with it. So punishing the football players and banning them from bowls, I thought that was the wrong move from the get-go. Totally from the get-go. And you know, and you know, as much as, you know, a lot of people don't like to admit it, but the students are directly affected by how the athletics do at a school like Penn State. If the football team is doing well, hey, that generates money, that generates fandom and hoopla around the campus. It makes the campus a much more enjoyable place to be as a student. You and I know. I mean, we went to Michigan State University, for goodness sake. When Michigan State went to the Final Four, what was that, my senior year, you know what I mean? Campus was crazy. You know, that was some of the best memories that I've ever had. You know what I mean? And you know, being out there at Cedar Village and seeing, you know, being around my friends and celebrating, those are great memories. To strip that kind of stuff from individuals who had nothing to do with what one sick human being did was totally unfair. So to go back and correct I agree with
you. All right, well, to start off, I agree that the players, it's unfortunate. I mean, you come to Penn State before the whole ban happened. You're expecting to play under this historic Joe Paterno and that historic program and all the wins that they brought over the years. It's unfortunate to have it happen. But I agree that, you know, it's nice to see it lifted because for those players, a lot of them have stuck around. I mean, they didn't really have that many transfers. Sure, it may have impacted recruiting a little bit. But for the most part, the current players on the team still stayed knowing that they weren't going to be able to go to a bowl. So that's a pretty good, I mean, you play to win the game. I mean, that's pretty cool to see that the players were still behind and there's a pretty unified team still over at Happy Valley. Now, to your point that you're glad that it was revoked and it was the right move, I totally disagree.
Really?
And here's why. Because the reason citing for the NCAA to uplift this ban, some of the reasons were that they implemented a new human resources system and there's better security at Penn State. But the problem with it is, how much better of a human resources and security system can you get? You can't stop a personnel. That's a single person that did something like that. And it was the failure of the individual people to report what Jerry Sandusky was doing. It's not like they need improved security cameras in the locker room. It's not like they need an updated paperwork system, okay, Al? You and I both know it was the single actions of Jerry Sandusky and the failure of all of the administrative people behind report on.
So let me get this straight. So you don't believe it was the right move simply because of the reasoning that the NCAA gave behind why they revoked it?
That's one reason. Now, the second reason I don't agree is it opens the floodgates for other bans. So let's say, for example, USC or a program like Ohio State, when they were giving away Maurice Claret cars and they were giving tattoos away to Terrell Pryor for free. When they were given all those kind of illegal circumstances, Ohio State lost its scholarships for years. And guess what? It's unfortunate.
As they should.
Right. And it's unfortunate, as they should. It's unfortunate for guys that, you know, that they're looking to come to Ohio State. They can't get an offer or so.
That's a totally different situation.
But what I'm saying is, although it was the players that received it, I agree, this time it was the players, it still opens a flag. I mean, what if, for example, they uplifted a ban on a player, and just because, the administration has been better over the years.
I disagree, Alex.
Now, for Penn State, Alex,
looking at the bigger picture here, this is a situation that the players and the overall football program, other than maybe the assistant coaches and Joe Pye, didn't have anything to do with. So why are you taking away, you know, the player's opportunity to play in a bowl and the student experience because of that? Was totally wrong. Legally, that's where the punishment should have came from. I agree with Joe Rexroth yesterday. I mean, I think Joe made a great point that this was more so a legal problem than a school problem here. And, you know, looking at the other situations where, you know, the NCAA could go back and renege on other punishments, those are totally different situations than child molestation charges by one man at a football program. Than somebody who took money.
Sure, and that's a good point.
That's a different ball
game. And it makes sense because you have the people and administration there to make the moves because that is their duty to monitor the athletic program. But on the other side of it, you are still Penn State Athletics. Even though you're playing, you're still a part of Penn State Athletics. So if you see something wrong, and there were players that did see stuff wrong, it is their obligation to go ahead and report it. So there's that side of it, too, where, yes, they didn't have anything to do with it.
Well, I didn't hear any players specifically saying they heard anything.
There were some
assistant coaches who saw some things going on. I mean, no players, though.
I mean, there weren't any players specifically seeing it, but there were some rumblings. And I'm sure the Penn State Athletics protected those players as well to go out and say something like that.
Well, this debate certainly isn't over, folks. We'll continue on tomorrow's Current Sports, and you also get to hear from Marcel Carruthers. Of course, we'll give you our sneak preview into our Current Sports TV episode. Again, folks, you've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR East Lansing. As always, take care. Have one fantastic and safe, wet, rainy Wednesday, and be easy, people.